Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The five stages of grief, as they have become known, were never intended to be prescriptive or even orderly. Internationally renowned grief expert David Kessler co-authored the books On Grief and Grieving and Life Lessons with grief research pioneer Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. He's the founder of the website grief.com and the author of many of his own books, and now he has a new one. It's called Finding Meaning, the Sixth Stage of Grief. David Kessler's own experience with grief is profoundly personal. He writes about the death of his son in this book, even as he shares stories of others who have found meaning in loss without marginalizing loss in a myriad of ways. And he joins us now on the phone from Los Angeles, California. David Kessler, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Now, I'm sure you have heard this as you've done other interviews, but just the process for me of reading this book was incredibly, there were some tears. There's some tears on the pages, and I kind of became aware of how much unprocessed grief I have. Are we all just walking around with piles and piles of unprocessed grief?
So many of us have those tears that have not been shed and, you know, emotions that are half felt. So I'm sorry and glad that that was your experience. I think part of the work of grief is to help us grieve fully and then live fully. So my hope is, even though some of those emotions might have been challenging, that they will help you live more fully now.
It felt incredibly good. And I want to talk to you a minute about that witnessing other people's grief and the value of that. But let's go back to these stages of grief not being prescriptive, because the five stages of grief are often misunderstood or, people talk about them in ways that you never really intended. Tell us about that, please.
Sure. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross first described those stages, denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance, around people who were dying in her book On Death and Dying in 1969. And it was in 2000s that her and I adapted them for grief. Our world is a, you know, we want five easy steps for everything. Yeah. And the good thing about them is it makes us feel like, oh, grief is not so unknown. But I can tell you, Elizabeth was a very organic, rule-breaking, messy person that would hate that in some ways things have tried to, you know, her grief's been neatened into five easy stages. And anyone who's gone through grief knows they're not five easy stages. And there's a lot of other emotions besides those. And I think for me, acceptance took on a finality in grief that her and I never intended. It was never meant to be sort of an ending to your grief.
Right. You have said that writing this book is part of a return for life to you after the death of your own son. You don't make that journey alone. How has it been for you today and, at the release of the book, having so many conversations about his life? Does it feel validating that now, you know, we know his name and we know his story, we know what kind of person he was and how much you loved him? Or is it incredibly painful? Talk about coming back to life a little bit through the writing of this book, if you would, please.
Sure. Well, that was the reason, you know, I have so many stories about people who have had a spouse that have died, a sibling that have died, a parent that died, a child, even our pets. And for me, it was a journey I wanted to take because I didn't want his death to be all there was. I wanted to find meaning for myself and bring it to other people. And so that's what I hope this journey would be. And it's been all of those things you've said. It is what we're all trying to do. We're all trying to grieve and experience the loss, the pain that's there because of how much we love them. And at the same time, struggle with how can we now live fully a life that honors them and remembers them and understands if their life was precious, so is ours, and for us to continue for those around us and ourselves.
so many times in reading this book, there's so many stories of different ways people have found meaning. So let's talk a little bit about meaning. But first, one of the things I was just astonished by the human spirit and the things that human beings go through, the kinds of losses that we endure and what we do during those times and after those times. Tell us a little bit about your work in the world, because you have been part of so many people's grief journeys after emergencies, after terrorist attacks, after someone moving into your house to live their final days in hospice and working with them. Why do you keep doing the work that you do?
Well, you know, I often think people who do this work, you don't choose it, it chooses you. And I, had a mother when I was 13 that had a very sterile hospital death. At the same time, there was one of the first mass shootings. And even as a young boy, I knew there was a better way to do the end of life and to deal with grief. And in some ways, I hope all those things I become, whether it's working with the police or the Red Cross or hospice and palliative care, that we're able to find meaning by changing things for others. And it's easy in this world to discuss post-traumatic stress, but I wanted people to know that post-traumatic growth is out there and actually occurs more frequently.
Not many people are saying that message right now, I can tell you, with a fair amount of confidence.
That's part of my work. That's part of my work.
And you talk about witnessing sort of coming alongside somebody in this chapter called Grief Must Be Witnessed. And I want to get at this idea so that people are not misinformed, that witnessing the grief and talking about meaning should no way ever marginalize, hey, let's find meaning in this, or that there's the good can come from this, and which is a trap that so many people who have experienced loss end up hearing when people don't know what to say.
Right. And meaning does not take away the pain. The pain is part of your love. There's no taking away the pain. But what we sometimes do is we sometimes see our friends and loved ones in grief and we try to fix them, or point out the silver lining, or cheer them up, or tell them, isn't it good they died quickly, or they lived to an old age, or you can get remarried, or have another child, and all those things we just say out of being grief illiterate. And the point really is to witness their grief, just to go, I can't make this better. I don't even have the right words, but I'm here with you through this.
Yeah.
And just to be a witness and bear witness to their sorrow without trying to fix them.
Why is that so hard for us?
Because we are such a fix-it productive society now.
Yeah.
We're like, let's do this. Let's get it better. Let's fix it. What do we need to do? What are the five things we need to do in grief? Let's get that handled.
Yeah.
And, grief is not about doing. Grief is about us being. And we are supposed to stop and slow down and get that grief turns our world upside down. And it's supposed to. There's nothing wrong with that. I tell people we come from a long lineage of dead people. Our ancestors knew how to do this.
Yeah.
In a strange way, I'm teaching people what our great-grandparents knew how to do. How to just be with these feelings without trying to fix them.
Yeah. Part of it, too, has to be that productivity is expected. Talk to people who haven't been, maybe they knew that they needed time to, go to a funeral. They needed time to stay home and cry after the loss of a dog, maybe, and weren't given that because there was a job to be done. There was something that needed to be done at work or their parents or just life, they had to go renew their driver's license the next day, pay their bills. Where do you begin if that grief is really not welcomed or allowed at work, in your family, in the culture that you live in? How do you find that space when you know that you need it?
Well, a couple of things. The first thing is to know it's your job to honor your own grief. And what other people think about it is really none of your business. So they don't know the relationship you had. They don't know the loss you had. And just know that the reality is you do, and you have to honor it. That's your work. And the truth is, grief doesn't need tons of time. It needs dedicated time. So, of course, we all have to go to work. We all have to get gas and get groceries and all those things. But it doesn't mean we can't dedicate our shower in the morning to just crying for them or taking a walk at lunch around the block alone, listening to their favorite music and just giving that grief just a few minutes.
Hmm. How is meaning different for different people? You have stories of people who have, you know, begun foundations and done enormous things to change the lives of others, and then meaning that is expressed in these very quiet, delicate ways as well.
Well, and that's so important. When we hear about meaning, we think about, oh, this gigantic thing we're all going to find. We're going to start organizations and foundations. And the reality is just that part of us that can take moments, meaningful moments. I tell the story in the book of a woman who gets stamps about Danny Thomas that reminds her of her father. And just in her daily work, once in a while, she pulls out a stamp and has a moment of thinking about her dad. It's in the moments of life. And one of the confusing things I want people to know, besides that meaning and that sixth stage of meaning doesn't take away the pain, that it's there in addition to it. It's also something that lives within us. It's not meaning in their death. There is no meaning in how they died or why they died. But there's meaning afterwards. How did they change us? You know, people often say to me, a part of me died with them. And I'll remind them, a part of them also lives in you. Mm-hmm. How do we nurture that part that we take of them into the world?
For people who order this book on your website, I'm sorry, I just lost your website, grief.com.
Grief.com.
Yeah, they can. There's more material to sort of help people engage in the process, you know, beyond reading the book. Tell me a little bit about some of those first steps to take and what sort of resources are available for people who are listening right now and say, yeah, I need more of this. I need some help moving through it.
Right. So people have been through horrible things in this world, and it's not like a quick, easy read a book.
Right.
So I also did a free companion class for anyone who buys the book, anywhere, their local bookstore, online, wherever. They can go to sixthstage.com, S-I-X-T-H, stage.com, or they'll also see it on grief.com. Get the book, take the free class, work through it. It's so much to do, but at the end, it will help you have a life that's worth living and honors your loved ones who have died.
Talk a little bit, if you will, about those complicated relationships, because there are so many. When you lose somebody who you had a loving, you know, rainbow relationship with, it can mean you grieve in a different way than if that person that you lost, you had unfinished business, or they were not the parent that you wanted them to be, or there's something else going on there. Tell us a little bit about those complicated relationships that we also grieve.
Yeah, let's be real. How many of us have those rainbow relationships? You know, people are complicated. And we have this idea that when people are dying, everything's going to get rosy and get resolved. But the truth is we die in the middle of arguments. Yeah. We die in the middle of estrangement. We die in the middle of complicated relationships. And even when we're talking about other things like death and other losses, I tell people, divorce, you know, divorce is the death of a relationship. A job loss is the death of your job. So life is complicated. And this idea that we notion that we have of it's all going to get cleaned up is just not true. So part of our work is to grieve the relationship, the parent, the spouse, the loved one, as they were. And sometimes we also have to grieve the ideal parent or ideal spouse or ideal person we didn't get this lifetime. Because we all don't get those rainbow relationships. They're pretty imperfect, and so are we. But if we grieve them as is with their good and their bad parts, I mean, think about whenever you come from a funeral that you just feel so touched by, it's because the funeral represented that person and connected you. We've all been to funerals where the clergy maybe didn't know the person and they describe someone who is just amazing. And you're like, well, it's a beautiful funeral. It wasn't Frank's, but it was beautiful. So, we actually grieve better in our authenticity than when we go, oh, they were an ideal person. They were a human.
And so are we. David Kessler, the book is called
So Are We.
Finding Meaning, the Sixth Stage of Grief. Thank you so much for your generosity with your time today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for doing this. Take care.